You remember an old Steve Martin routine where he said, "Let's get small." Anybody remember that? Let's get small. When you look at a video like that, does it not make you feel small? It puts into some imaginable size the vastness of the universe. Think about this. Our solar system, with all of our planets, we're not quite sure if Pluto is a planet yet, so the number keeps changing, but our solar system sits on the far end of an arm of the Milky Way galaxy. Now, if you were able to get in a spaceship that traveled at the speed of light, if you went from one end of the Milky Way galaxy to the other, it would take you 100,000 light years. Now, if that's not enough to blow your mind right there, scientists believe there's approximately 100 billion galaxies in our universe. Talk about getting small. I mean, it's almost more than the mind can fathom. The Hubble telescope, which was launched in 1991, has sent back amazing pictures of the universe. This is a picture that's put together over a number of different images from one angle. Each speck of light you're looking at, now mind you, this is one angle lens into the universe. Each speck of light represents a galaxy. Our universe is just of amazing size and proportion. I mean, it's just hard to take in. You can't help but feel in awe of the size of it. No wonder the ancient Hebrews would look up into a starry sky and say words like this: "When I look at the heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars that you have established, what are human beings that you are mindful of them?" We're beginning our summer series, starting with the book of Genesis, going all the way back to the very beginning of not just our history, but the history of creation. Our series this summer is called SpiritualAncestry.com, and we're going to look at these stories of Genesis, that the purpose of them is to help us understand the spiritual roots for many of the issues that we deal with in life today. And one of the most fundamental in the human spirit is to ask the question, where do I come from? Where did all of this come from? You can picture ancient Hebrew people sitting around a fire answering the question. They came up with a story that was different from the other stories told by other people in other lands. This story talked about one creator responsible for everything and how that creator wants to have an intimate relationship with creation. So you can picture a child looking up at a starry sky and saying, "Where did we come from?" And one of the elders sitting there would start the story, "In the beginning." That is an issue which scientists in the last several decades have given all new interest to dealing with, probably because of the technology that's come about in the last number of years. Things like the Hubble telescope, spaceships that are now getting to the furthest regions of our solar system, abilities to do carbon dating that are helping scientists get to the origins of the universe. That discovery by many, that insight is causing some to return to the age-old debate between science and religion. And they're saying that all of these new discoveries are just further evidence that there cannot be a God. It goes back to the turn of the 20th century when the debate really heated up between creation faith and the idea of evolution. 1925, there was a trial in Dayton, Tennessee. A teacher named John Scopes was put on trial because he broke state law in Tennessee by teaching evolution. That was against the law. in public schools. There's a wonderful movie made about that trial. It's called Inherit the Wind. If you've never watched this movie, it's an old black and white. It is well worth a few hours one afternoon or one evening. It stars Spencer Tracy. He plays the liberal Chicago lawyer, Clarence Darrow. And Gene Kelly plays an atheist reporter from Baltimore who's covering the story. And the closing scene of the movie is the lawyer and the reporter in the courtroom alone. And the lawyer lets out that he actually is a person of faith, that he doesn't debunk this whole Bible. And the atheist reporter says, "You're a turncoat." And they get into this little debate. This is how the movie ends. They get into a debate, not about scientific evidence or whether we interpret the Bible literally. They start talking about the meaning of life and why are we here. That's where the debate took them. That's where the Bible takes us. Wrestling with who are we? Why are we here? The Bible does not get at the question of how did creation come to be. The Bible gets at the question of why did creation come to be. There's a fun story about Albert Einstein. He was on a train and a conductor went past him to punch his ticket and he got flustered because he couldn't find his ticket. He's checking his pockets, his briefcase. It's nowhere to be found. And the conductor looks at him and says, "Dr. Einstein, I recognize you. I know who you are. I trust you purchased a ticket. Don't worry about it." And he went on his way. A few minutes later, he looked back and the great scientist was on his hands and his knees, looking under all the seats, searching frantically for his ticket. So the conductor went back and said, "Dr. Einstein, I said don't worry about it. I know who you are." And Dr. Einstein looked up and he said, "Sir, knowing who I am right now is not nearly as important as knowing where I'm supposed to go." You could say that the Bible is a book that is getting at both of those questions. Who are we? And where are we supposed to be going? So one of the first affirmations in the creation story of Genesis is exactly what was affirmed in the children's message today. Creation is good. That is a fundamental point in the creation story. With each day of creation that we heard, day and night, water and land, animal, everything that gets created, God says, it's good, it's good, it's good. When is the first time God does not just say it's good, God says very good? When people were created. When people were made, God said, now that is very good. In other words, you are God's masterpiece. Right now, look at somebody sitting beside you. Look them in the eyes and say to them, "You're a piece of work." Now, you're supposed to mean that in a good way, okay? That's supposed to be a good thing. We're all a piece of work. Now, the goodness of creation is also tied up in a very subtle message in the way that creation is told in Genesis 1, and that is, this world is made with order to it. I mean, when you read the story like we had it sung a while ago, there's this methodical rhythm. God spoke, things came to be, it is good, there's evening and there's morning. Every day, the same rhythm. And what it's communicating to us is we live in a world of order and dependability. There's dependability in this world. Now, this is what causes some scientists to believe in God. When they get into the details of just how ordered our universe is, they start to say, how could this just be random? If we had God's ability to create the universe, let's say that we could create our own Big Bang and all of the elements that went into making a Big Bang possible, the odds that you would be able to have the conditions result in what is required for carbon-based life, in other words, the creation of our Earth, those odds are less than 1 in 10 to the 60th power. The odds are less than 1 in 10 with 60 zeros behind it. You stand a better chance of winning the Indiana lottery every time you buy a ticket. This is what it looks like. Those odds are like this. If you took an arrow and shot it at a target 1 centimeter square that's on the other side of the universe and hitting it. That's what those odds are like. Albert Einstein put that in a description one day. He said the idea that there could be a Big Bang that randomly created the Earth is about the same as saying an explosion in the print factory could result in the Bible. Those odds cause some people to say it cannot just be random. There has to be a designer behind it all. But for everybody who might come to faith on that evidence, there's an equal, if not greater, number of people who say it's not the order of the universe that gets me. It's the disorder. It's the randomness that exists within the universe. It's the earthquakes that can happen, the tornadoes, the crime, and the violence, and the evil. That's what causes me not to believe there's a God. If there's a God who can create that order, why would a God let some of these things happen the way they do? And scientists will equally come back and say, if this world were so predictable as to not allow in any form unpredictability or randomness, we would not have a creation the way we have it today. There's something inherent in a creation that allows for randomness that makes it good. Now, put that in a personal way. God did not make you a robot. You are sitting in a church right now, in a pew, listening to this sermon because you chose to be here. Now, some of you may feel like you were made to be here by somebody sitting close to you, but no matter what, you still have freedom to be here. You have freedom to believe. You have freedom to respond to God and to choose to even think that there is a God. Now, that freedom God gives us also allows us to do very painful things to other people, but it's the freedom that we have to choose that makes this creation good. Friday night at annual conference, the bishop asked Carver McGriff to preach the memorial service. The bishop introduced him and he said, "Do you mind if I tell the conference that you are 91 years old?" Carver said, "I'd rather you not." Typical Carver fashion. In his sermon, Carver told about the death of his wife when he was serving here at St. Luke's. That random accident that happened that many of you remember when you were here. And Carver put in very base terms what he went through in his faith in that aftermath. He put it in such a blunt way, anybody who's come close to that experience could sit there and nod their head and say, "Yep, that's exactly how I felt." He said he went home one night to a dark, empty house, and he was mad at God. And he wondered if everything he had ever preached in the pulpit of St. Luke's about God's goodness and God's love, if it wasn't just a bunch of bunk. He was in the funeral home at Flannery Buchanan at the greeting, the calling. And he saw somebody standing in line he had not seen in many, many years, a classmate of his from seminary. He had gone on to be a pastor in Nebraska. And the minute he heard about the death of Carver's wife, he packed his family up in a car, hitched it to a camper, drove all night long, and through the next morning, parked the camper in the parking lot here at St. Luke's, and then went and stood for hours in the line at the funeral home. When he got to Carver, all he did was he walked up and he gave him such a tight bear hug. Carver said, "I wonder if I was going to be able to breathe." And then he whispered 3 words in Carver's ear and he walked off, came back, spent the night, hitched the trailer up the next day, and they drove all the way back to Nebraska. But Carver said those 3 words got him through. He said, "God loves you. God loves you." For Carver, what really made the difference was knowing where the words came from. Somebody who was willing to drive all night and half of another day just to say the words. That it came from somebody who believed it to the core of his being, that despite the chaos and the randomness and the pain and the heartache that we don't understand, there is something that's dependable in this world. God loves you. And sometimes we have to stand on the dependability of other people's faith in order to stay upright ourselves. We just need to get to near somebody who says, right now my faith is shattered, but I need to stand on your firmness. That in this chaotic, random world, there is something we can depend on. Another truth that this takes us to in the creation story is not only that there's goodness and dependability, but you and I were made for relationship. That is clearly made in the creation story. In fact, to make that point is to recognize something in Genesis 1 and 2 that gets very confusing for people, and that is there's not one creation story in the Bible, there are two. You read Genesis 1, each day's creation, everything that's made, and then you get to verse 4 of chapter 2, and it starts all over again. In the beginning, when God made the heavens and the earth, and it goes through everything God made, and you say, wait, didn't I already read this? Well, yes, but no. Genesis 2 gives us like another picture into creation, just like the Hubble telescope. It turns the lens a little bit from a powerful God of order to a God who wants to be in relationship. A God who makes human beings and talks to those human beings and enters into life with them. In fact, this creation story is the one that uses the word not good. When is the only time God looks at creation and goes, ah, that's not good? When he said, it's not good that man should be alone. And God makes another for companionship and relational fulfillment. In other words, God did not make us to be loners. God made us to be interdependent creatures. Something interesting scientists have discovered about our universe is that it is expanding all the time. Our universe is growing at a rate so fast, no one's quite sure how rapidly it's growing. Guys, do we have the images from Hubble this time? Yeah, here we go. These are some images from the Hubble telescope. What you're looking at right now is the birth of a star. You ever heard the expression, a star is born? That's what it looks like. Interstellar gases being compressed by a level of gravity that over an eon forms that into a star. Here's another picture. I mean, these are just magnificent pictures, aren't they? This is a star in the making. And then this next picture is a star that's dying. It's exploding. In other words, the life that we live with, where there is birth all the time, there's death all the time, guys, that's going on throughout the universe right now. In other words, creation is not a static event that happened one time. It's happening now. We were not created, we're being created. You're not just a piece of work. You're a work in progress. Do you ever wish other people in your life were more completed works of art? Well, guess what? You're unfinished as well. And the mysterious way God works is God uses all of us to help do his finishing touches. We need each other to make each other better. Right about 4 years ago, our family moved here from North Carolina. And I'm in a little nostalgic mood this week because our youngest daughter graduated from North Central High School Wednesday night. So we've had a lot of different end of year events. And last night we had a graduation party at the house and lots of people came over. And watching these pictures of Anna when she was just a little tyke growing up, and then as recent as pictures from this week that just made me go, oh man, how did that happen so fast? But a couple of people came by, of all the people who came by, and it was a fun evening for everybody who came. But two people in particular, the retired athletic director from North Central High School, Chuck Jones, and one of our own members who was the girls' soccer coach Anna's freshman year, Tim Blom. They made a point to be there because of how much not just Anna, but that whole class of girls meant to them. And they took Anna under their arm when we arrived here in Indianapolis. And she had such an incredible high school experience. And this has nothing to do with my sermon, but I just want to say to any of you who are teachers, who are involved in education, who are coaches, who influence young lives, I want to thank you. Because I know the difference it made for our girls. I want to thank you for the difference you make in the lives of young people. I know there's a lot of stuff you have to put up with all the time. But you positively impact people's lives. So I'm thinking last night about when we moved here and our daughter Sarah was entering her 11th grade year, Anna a freshman, and something special happened to the two of them. They tolerated each other before we moved here, but they became best friends after we moved here. Why did that happen? Because they moved to a new universe where they didn't know anybody or anything and they needed each other. And they became each other's best friends, and it's really fun to watch that continuing as they become adults. It just reminded me, all the time, we can find ourselves in a new universe, and we go, how do I live in this place in life? I'm somewhere I didn't know how to prepare for this. And the answer is the people God will put in our lives. That's the answer. We need each other. We're made for relationship. God does God's finishing work through one another. And one more point about the creation stories in Genesis 1 and 2. This gets at the question of where are we going? And that is, these stories remind us that we have a job to do. We are to be stewards of creation. The old Bible language says, have dominion. I think that's unfortunate language because some people take that to mean I can do whatever I want. That's not what it means. We are to take care of this creation like God would take care of it in our place. When we're doing things like reducing our energy, caring for the water supply of this world, even remembering to take our reusable shopping bags to the grocery store, which I forget all the time, those are spiritual activities. We're doing our first job that God gave us, but I've often interpreted that word steward to mean manager, and I don't know that that definition is enough. For those who know my family, you know that we have this pet. Some call it a dog. It's less than 3 pounds. It's like this little furball, more like a gerbil than a dog. It cannot fetch. It cannot wrestle on the ground. I don't know why you call something like that a dog. But I manage that dog. I cannot be considered guilty of not taking care of it. I'll let the dog out when it needs to go out. Once a week, I'll check to see if it has food and water in the bowls. You know, every now and then, I'll even let it sit next to me on the couch. But Susan's mother, Grandma, loves our dog, Sugar. I mean, even the name, it just gets worse for me. Sugar is the name of this thing. So Sugar went to stay with Julie this last semester of college, and she lived with Susan's parents. So when we went for the graduation, I had not seen the dog in a long time, and I couldn't believe the way the dog looked. One problem that Maltese dogs have is their eyes secrete a little fluid, and it gives them these really dark places under their eyes. Well, the dark was gone. Grandma said, well, there's something that you can actually buy and give the dog that takes care of that. Oh. I said, well, how did you get rid of all of the knots in the dog's hair? She goes, well, I brush the dog every day. I said, oh, so that works, huh? Okay. And this dog loves to be near Grandma. In other words, Grandma didn't manage the dog. She loved the dog. Sometimes I wonder if I just manage life instead of loving life. Sometimes I wonder, am I just managing my calendar? Am I trying to manage my family? When people ask me, how are you doing? And my answer is, well, I'm managing. Am I just going through life a manager, or am I going through life the way God made me to go through life? Loving it, getting the most out of it, looking at every day I wake up as a brand new creation all over again. That this day holds the gift and the possibility of wonder and excitement and new discoveries are universe-wide. Am I loving life? Scientists say we all go through this life leaving a carbon footprint. We're supposed to keep it reduced as much as possible, but I believe we also leave a spiritual footprint. Nobody leaves this life neutral. We either make it better, make this world better, make other people better, or we don't. Maybe the best way to end a sermon on creation is invite us to think, what's the mark you want to leave?